RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Ian Smith is an entrepreneur with several ventures in the medical and health slash wellness fields, co-owner of Summit Rejuvenation and Recovery CBD, a self-published author and public speaker with well over 100 speaking events in men's coaching, business and entrepreneurship and politics. As a former congressional candidate for New Jersey, Ian is best known for his defiant stand against the COVID lockdowns and the ensuing battle with the state of New Jersey, amassing millions of dollars in fines, facing 5 years in prison, and still the battle continues. Ian is now a resident of Florida and is active in local community and political efforts. And on the 19th of May, he posted this on Twitter. 4 years ago, we reopened Atlas Gym in direct violation of an unconstitutional order by Governor Philip Murphy to close small businesses in New Jersey. And he went on to say, I'm thrilled to announce that we have achieved a major victory in the long, hard fight against the state. And if the name rings a bell, you might have seen Ian Smith with Tucker Carlson recently. And he joins us from Florida, USA. We want to hear the story. Ian, thanks for beaming in all the way. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, where to start? I asked this question a lot of people kind of in your space. How long did it take in the gut or otherwise to know something was wrong?
We knew it right away. However, you know, when early before the lockdowns came, we, you know, no matter where you were in the world, you sort of, you heard the whispers of panic, and then ultimately, you know, the media industrial complex in each one of our respective countries sort of ratcheted up the fear, and then there was, you know, talk of lockdowns, and I think that was a brand new idea for a lot of people, and that never sat well with us as citizens, but as particularly as small business owners, you know, knowing the challenges that small businesses face. Even in good times, shutting down for a period of time with no real information was very scary for us. But, you know, we didn't know enough to confidently stay open. You know, the last thing that we would ever want to do is harm anybody. We're in the health industry, you know, so we obliged, although begrudgingly. And so we weren't happy about it to begin with. But the major breakthrough moment for me was the first day. We continued to go to work, and you know, on my drive to work that next day, you know, I passed all these big corporate stores that were allowed to be open, and the parking lots were full of people. And then I pulled into my little strip mall, you know, where the gym's located, and it was ghost town. And that enough for me, even though we didn't understand the scope of sort of what was happening and the grand scheme of the plan of COVID, we knew that something was fatally wrong at that point, and that we had to do something. So it was almost immediate.
So you defied the lockdowns, kept your gym open. Then what happened?
So on day 11, actually, of the shutdown, in the United States, they announced a $2.4 trillion economic stimulus plan. And, you know, we read through that, and it was about 1,000 pages long. And that was all of the proof that we needed to be confident in reopening. And that's ultimately where we made the decision. But we stayed closed, actually, for another 6 weeks, because we knew that reopening was going to come with some sort of resistance. At least we had the feeling that it would, and obviously we were correct. So we took 6 weeks to put forth a comprehensive safety protocol that went above and beyond what essential businesses were required to do, what government was doing, what the medical industry was doing in hospitals. And 2 months to the day of the original shutdown is when we reopened. And I made an announcement on my Instagram at the time. It was a much smaller than it is today, but it was very, very, very well received and also very hated. And that's what got the attention of Tucker Carlson for that first of 12 interviews that he had me on.
Well, yeah.
And when we reopened, we were met with resistance from day one. We started getting municipal citations, which are just, you know, low level misdemeanors, as they're termed here in the States. Not really serious charges, and we kept reopening, and every day we would accumulate more of them, ultimately getting about 80 between my former partner and I. And once they realized that those weren't going to work, what they did was they took those municipal citations, again, which are ultimately nothing more than a traffic ticket, and they took the executive order from the governor to shut the state down, and they went in front of a judge, and that judge granted them a court order. And that is where a lot of the very punitive measures came from. Ultimately, it escalated very, very quickly. It sort of hockey sticked right up and got very serious very quickly. We started being fined $15,497.76 per day for every day that we were open. We had our locks changed. We broke the locks, went back in. We were ultimately arrested. They boarded up our business, and we kicked the plywood doors in and reopened it. And then we were facing 4.5 years in prison for that violation, and ultimately fined millions of dollars. They emptied our bank accounts. They went after us in our business bank account, and then they were able to, with the help of this judge, pierce the LLC, the protections that the corporate LLC provides, and they went after us personally. They went after my Venmo, my Cash App, my PayPal, any sort of online payment platforms that they could. They stripped us of our business license. After they allowed gyms to reopen, they stripped us of our business license, and they tried to just basically bankrupt us by stopping us from you know, being open, and dragging us through the court for the next 2 years.
So they declared war on you. Sounds like thermonuclear level.
They absolutely did. Every time. You know, we didn't really have a strategy because we didn't know what was going to be coming our way. And for us, the only strategy was the gym stays open, you know, no matter what. No matter what they did, our objective every day was to get up and go to work, and to provide the service to the community that we do as a gym. So every time they did something, thankfully, with the social media presence that I had garnered, we were able to sort of showcase it to the world. And every time that they would do something, they would either piss people off more, or they would piss more people off. And ultimately raising an army for us, just by their outlandish measures. And they absolutely did declare war on us. They tried everything. There was a lot of dirty tactics. We caught the Belmar is the name of the town that the gym was in. We caught the Belmar Municipal Organization blocking our sewage, causing our toilets to overflow. They attempted to shut off our power. Yeah, so they went nuclear. They tried everything, and that's just kind of it's very telling because these people are not used to resistance. And when they face it, they don't really know what to do, and they sort of short circuit. And the punishments just got sort of crazier and crazier. But we were able to showcase it to people, which was the strategy. We could show how these people would go to great lengths in the face of logic and in the face of developing information. They would not back off of us until ultimately they had so much egg on their face from us showcasing what they did to the point that they ultimately backed off. And then that's when they really kicked it into the court system, because there's not a whole lot of spectacular news, and they knew that it would sort of take away from our momentum, because every time they tried to punish us outwardly, we were able to showcase it to the world. So it moved into the courts after about a year, and then it was court battles for another year and a half. Until we got the business licenses back. Ultimately, the township gave them back because they were no longer able to sustain court battles. You know, it's a small town, and we just kept launching lawsuits. They ultimately folded. And then 2 years after that is when we just got our most recent victory, where all of those municipal charges were ultimately dropped.
I want to talk about that shortly. I'm curious, though, two things. First of all, you mentioned the big stores were open, so it was okay for them. So this was a targeting... of small business, which is, you know, at the base level of how you build communities. We know that.
Yeah, the middle class.
The other thing is, were they trying to save the world, or was it the fact that you were kind of humiliating them that made them sort of double down? What was it?
Yeah, well, you know, they would pretend as if they were trying to save the world. That's the cloak of virtue that they shielded their unconstitutional and inhumane actions. You know, that was their story, is they were just trying to save the world. But obviously their actions didn't line up with that, because I'm sure you guys saw it where you were at. These politicians and these people who were telling everybody to stay home were violating their own orders left and right. And it was rules for thee and not for me. We had to just let them show their own stupidity and their own ignorance. And that was really the only strategy we had, was just playing into the arrogance of these people who were forcing this upon the society.
What sort of encounters did you have with officials, presumably turning up and banging the plywood over the windows and doors and changing the locks and all of that? What was their demeanor? How did they carry themselves in the face of this?
You know, this was a very difficult thing for me, because we're a gym, you know, that is very ingrained in the local community. You know, we had a lot of police officers and people that lived in the town and served in the town or served in the state government in some capacity, who were members. And then ultimately a lot of those police officers had to, you know, as they say, we're just doing their jobs. And that was very difficult for me to not hate them for that. Because there's a lot of complexity and nuance to that. You know, these people are stuck essentially with a very, very hard choice between getting fired for doing the right thing, or just kind of turning a blind eye and saying, hey, I'm sorry, but this is my job. So we tried to keep it as respectful as possible. You know, there were a lot of officers who, you know, they were present, but they didn't really want to be involved. And there were the county sheriffs, the sheriff's department, instead of the local police force, was very much on the side of the state. So we didn't have some nice words for them, you know, but we tried to keep it as respectful as possible, knowing that everybody was in a bad situation and trying not to judge people, even if they made the wrong choices, because, you know, at the end of the day, ultimately these people, while they contribute to the problem and how we would have loved some of these people to be on our side, you know, ultimately our true enemy was the people giving the orders. And the people who were utilizing public office and public, you know, organizations like the police or like the health department, who, you know, the reason that they're there is public safety, not rule enforcement. And we were not harming anybody. And you know, the tale of the tape shows that nobody ever got sick. We had no deaths associated with the facility. So it was really just a game of patience as well. We had to know that we were in the right. And that if we were to act out and sort of scream at these people and curse at them, that would give our enemies the ammunition they needed to sort of paint us as you know, these wild cards and as these, you know, these derelicts or these, you know, these outlaws. So it required a lot of patience, and it required a lot of biting your tongue and not saying, you know, exactly what you felt, and, you know, having faith that that we could just bear the load of the punishment, and ultimately, you know, we would be proven right in the end, and that hopefully people would learn from what we went through.
Yeah, the amazing thing that our listeners will be thinking about now, we had a similar situation here, gym owner in Auckland, our biggest city, who basically did what you did. And probably wasn't fined to the level that you were, incurred the costs, but his business was affected, and he was, you know, on national TV, he was pilloried, let's say, and kind of the same sort of MO here. Isn't it amazing that how many thousand miles we are away from each other, and it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, right is right. Right is right, and wrong is wrong. And we were not on the wrong side of this. Anybody who even just had questions about COVID, was treated as some sort of just dangerous individual, this threat to society. And, you know, these people were all right, even if they just had questions. You know, that's, we were on the right side of this. And it's knowing that was half of the battle, knowing that and that there were others like us. You know, we came in contact with businesses all across the country and all across the world who were fighting similar battles. And although we couldn't help each other because every situation was different, even here in the United States, from state to state, there were different measures that the government was using. Some people were using the police. Some people were using the Department of Health. You know, some people were using zoning, you know, boards and whatever. So it was very comforting knowing that there was other people. And, you know, and that just shows that, you know, across cultures and throughout the world, you know, there is a definitive right and wrong. And what happened during the COVID lockdowns was definitively wrong. It was a trampling of people's fundamental human rights. It was inconsiderate at the very, very least, and it was malicious at its very worst. And you know, I'm very proud of anybody who had the courage to do what was very hard at the time, and do in a lot of cases what was very unpopular and you know, downright dangerous. You know, there was a lot of people who lost the battle, who tried to stay open and didn't have the resources that we had, or didn't get the luck that some people had and were able to garner support or weather the storm. So, you know, that was a very, very inspiring thing, knowing that, you know, we were crazy, but we weren't the only crazy ones. And we were certainly right in it.
I want to get your comment on this. Where were the real men in all of this? Why weren't they standing up? Why weren't they protecting, well, their families, number one, but, you know, these principles, where were they?
That is the million-dollar question, I think, not only for the COVID years, but I think that question is still relevant today with whatever else is going on. And I think it's a fundamental deficiency that as societies as a whole, especially in, you know, in Western cultures, and even, you know, in everywhere, but in terms of Western culture, I think men have gotten very complacent, and that we've grown soft in the comforts of the modern world, and that we're not used to conflict, and that a lot of us don't know how to handle it. You know, and admittedly for me, this was something that we learned along the way. This was a strength and a set of attributes that we developed. You know, as we got further into it, we got stronger. But I just don't think that men have been tested on that level in quite some time, and that we've just grown complacent. You know, the modern world has its comforts, and a lot of people didn't want to sacrifice or put their financial futures at risk or lose their job or, you know, get yelled at in the grocery store for not wearing a mask. But I think that's something that became glaringly obvious during COVID, because had even 10% more men stood up, we would have had overwhelming numbers. You know, and I think one of the things is that men have forgotten how important of a role that they do play in the preservation and protection of society. I think that we tell ourselves a very dangerous lie, is that somehow what we do is not important or meaningful, and that we, you know, what does it matter? You know, if I, you know, I don't agree with this, but what does it matter if I just wear the mask to go in the grocery store? Like, instead of being like, no, this matters, you know, my voice matters, my actions matter, not only for myself and for my family, but for others around me to inspire them. Because there were so many people who were not in agreement with what was going on, but they were compliant. And I would see it a lot. You know, I used to travel quite a bit during the COVID times when I was speaking, and I didn't wear a mask at all. And traveling was a nightmare. I mean, it was, sometimes I'd get kicked off the plane. Sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes I'd get permanently banned. You know, sometimes I'd get through with a breeze. Sometimes I'd get pulled for extra security screening and I'd miss my flight. And, you know, they made it terrible for me. But every time I would go into the airport, I would notice that people would watch what was happening to me. And they might start out wearing a mask and kind of see what was going on. And then I'd look back over and I'd see them sort of gain just a little bit of courage, knowing that they weren't alone. You know, we don't know who's watching us, and you'll never know who you will inspire. I mean, if you would have asked me 4.5 years ago if I could have had the impact on my local community, the state, the country, and even internationally that we did, I would have said the same thing. You know, what does it matter what I do? I'm just one person. But the reality is that that's a very limiting belief, and it will stop you from doing the right thing because you're lying to yourself, and it's an excuse. But it's a convenient one, you know, for us to tell ourselves. And men need to forget about that, and they need to realize that everything that they do matters, for themselves, for their families, for their communities, and ultimately for their country and the world as a whole. And you know, I think we're starting to see that more. I think we need a lot more of it. We need men to step back into that role in society and protect. And that doesn't just mean from physical violence. That means protecting the values and the principles that guide our society, and being moral and doing the right thing when it is challenging. Because if we had just 10% more men in the world who thought like that and who understood the power that their choices have, I think that it would be a lot harder for them to do the things that they do.
Yeah, well said. I've always thought that the male role, or one of the male roles, is the detection of BS.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well,
like,
said.
That's the first line of defense is the BS detection, and for so many that was lost. The legal battles then, a David and Goliath struggle, right?
Very much so. It was us and the people that supported us through donations and all of these things, taking on at one point 75% of the state's legal resources. The state has 12 attorneys, and 9 of them were on our case at one point, fighting a legal battle against an entity that represents itself essentially in court. And has unlimited resources, has taxpayer dollars to just fight lawsuits forever. And we were fighting with limited resources, although we were gifted with resources, they were limited against the state. So it was certainly a David and Goliath sort of thing. And we knew that. We knew that we would sustain heavy losses. We knew that there wouldn't be any good news for a while. And thankfully, we had a good legal team who guided us through the process and gave us the truth even when it was inconvenient. And they told us that very, very early on. They said, don't expect this to be easy. Don't expect this to be short. And don't expect this to be fair. But this is the fight that you are taking on. So if you're going to fight, just know those things, you know, and if you know those things, you won't be so distraught and swayed and stressed out by it. You're just going to know that this is the way that the battle is going to go, that this is going to be, you'll win, you know. And they said that, they said ultimately you'll win if you can stay on your feet long enough. And that ultimately was our strategy. Was, we know that the truth will come out. We saw it come out every single day. There was always a growing resistance to COVID, and there was always more information proving us right. It was just a matter of staying faithful to what we started long enough to see those results.
Was there any time that you thought, "Oh, this is too hard, man. This is, you know, I could walk away from this right now, take my losses and reset"?
There were many times. You know, we made a promise to ourselves early on before we ultimately opened. And we said that we were going to see it through until the wheels fell off, you know, that we weren't going to dip our toes in the water, that we were going to jump in, and that we were just going to not give ourselves any other choice. But yeah, I mean, there was doubt all along the way. You know, when you get fined $15,000 a day, you know, the first one's kind of like, okay, ha ha ha, you know, like, give me your best shot. You know, but when they start coming every day and 15,000 turns into 100,000, and then 6 figures turns into 7. Whoa. There are moments along the way where you're like, am I crazy? Like, do I want to do this to myself and my future? Like, do I want to have a a tab with the government that's millions of dollars. There were a lot of those moments. They were short-lived, and they were short-lived because we had people who, although they couldn't take the punches with us, they were there to pick us up. They were there to give us support and love and prayer. I mean, I have a drawer that's a big, deep drawer of letters and prayer cards and handwritten notes from all over the world. I mean, I remember one day particularly, I was feeling really defeated, just like no sleep. You know, we were working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. There was always some looming threat. And I got a package actually from Australia. And it was a newspaper. It was something from Melbourne, the Melbourne Times or whatever it is.
I think it's the Age. Yeah.
And there was a handwritten note. And it was from somebody in Melbourne who said, you know, we stand with you. And I opened it up, and on the front page of the newspaper was, the headline read something like anti-lockdown protesters clash with police. And I'm not sure in New Zealand, but I know in Australia, the police were very heavy handed.
They were here too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw footage of it, and we didn't experience a lot of that here in the States. But I was in tune with what was going on around the world. And the picture was this landscape photo of this like militarized police line. And there was an individual standing in front of it, and he's mid wave of like of his Australian flag, and he's wearing a T-shirt from the gym, and it was, you know, the shirt we sold was Belmar for Everybody. You know, it was the Attilus Belmar was the gym and Belmar for Everybody, and he's wearing one of our shirts, and we made these hats that said "Make Politicians Afraid Again," that sort of play off of the Make America Great Again hat. And moments like that were like a can of gas on the fire. Like, it was like, no matter how bad I felt, it was like, we're not alone. We're going through what we're going through, and it's scary, and we don't know what's going to happen. But here's this guy in Australia who resonates with our message, who has supported us by buying, you know, some of our merchandise. So those moments came, but we were very fortunate to be connected and surrounded by a group of people that became an international like army of people who just gave us the strength to take one more step into the next day and do it again and do it again and do it again.
So the outcome is, I think, what, all charges or whatever dropped, all fines gone?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So the municipal charges have been dropped with prejudice, meaning that they can't be reopened or revisited by the state in any capacity. And now, like I said earlier, those municipal charges were the basis of the court order, which what resulted in the really harsh punishments, the violation of the court order. So now, since those charges are gone, we can now go back to court and sort of appeal and say, you know, this court order is no longer valid because what you based it off of is gone and dismissed with prejudice. So if the court order is invalid, so are the fines, so are all the punishments. That is going to be another battle in and of itself, which will be sort of we're getting ready for right now. So that will take some time, but I have no doubt that we'll achieve victory with that as well. It's very funny when the state moves against you, there's much haste in their proceedings. You know, we used to get phone calls from our attorneys, and they'd say, you know, you guys got to get ready. You got court. And we'd be like, when? And they'd be like, in an hour. When you move against the state, that system can be very, very, very sluggish. So again, it's just patience at this point. There's no more looming threat of anything. There's no, looming threat of them coming because they know it's invalid, but they won't admit that unless you make them.
And you can presumably go for some sort of compensation. I imagine you've been terribly compromised business-wise and in your personal life through this experience. no fault of your own, completely imposed upon you. So, okay, yeah, you're saying yes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So part one of that would be getting the court order to be dismissed or invalidated. And then part two and three is give us back all the money you took and pay us back for all of the lawyer fees. And then part three would be now you owe us remedy for the damages that have been incurred because of your actions.
Well, you're going to look back on this someday. What sort of view? I mean, you've got to live with your conscience, right? In the end, and that's all you've got, really, in the end. So your conscience is okay. I take it you're okay with your conscience.
It's very okay. It's one of the one of the things I'm most proud of is that we, as a community came together and were able to do this, and do it the right way. We didn't come out guns blazing. We came out trying to compromise, trying to be rational. And they showed their true colors and ultimately, our integrity is intact. That's more important than anything, is knowing that not that we were right, but that we were justified in what we were doing, and that our actions were true and just and the right ones ultimately.
And that turned out to be a superpower in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really amazing story. Really cool to talk with you. I want to get a couple of answers from you on a few other matters, which we're all talking about here. You got an election coming up soon.
Yes,
you're in a state that is known for pushing back. Is that why you're there now?
Part of the reason. The other reason is that I recently had a son, and my parents live here, and I wanted the community around my son. I wanted my parents to be able to be grandparents and be active in his life. But yeah, it certainly doesn't hurt to move to Florida in a place where small business is protected and it's recognized, and it's far from perfect, but it's run quite differently and quite better than some of the more left leaning states in the country.
And Mar-a-Lago just down the road, maybe, I don't know.
A couple hours.
Yeah. So what's your prediction, let's say, for November?
I wish I could say with certainty how I feel. My biggest concern is that we have a lot of questions about the integrity of our election system here in the United States. We watched one of the biggest just nonsensical things happen. We watched a president who was wildly popular, who had support in every direction you turned your head, leading up to the 2020 elections. We watched, there was so much support, and you saw nothing from the other side. Nothing. You didn't see the lawn signs and the rallies and people were organizing parades and boat parades caravans somehow he lost. And a lot of people have questions about how that happened. There's a lot of questions, and my fear is that same system is still very much alive and unchanged. And that's not to discredit the work that anybody who works for election integrity in this country has been doing, because there's a lot of people on the ground who work very quietly behind the scenes who have put a tremendous amount of work in. My fear is that that the needle hasn't been moved far enough, and that we'll see a repeat of 2020. There's no doubt in my mind that if there's a fair election, that Donald Trump will win by a massive landslide. Things have gotten so turned upside down in this country that even people who don't like the character of Donald Trump are begging for life to return you know, in an economic sense and in a just a day-to-day sense as it was in 2019, 18, 17, and 16, you know, under Donald Trump. You know, people can't ignore the fact that the cost of living has gone up by 30% in many areas. You know, no matter how you feel ideologically in terms of your politics, it's hard to ignore when you're making the same amount of money that you were making a couple of years ago, or maybe even more, and it goes nowhere. People are struggling, you know, and it's really affecting the lower and middle classes to the point that, you know, everybody you talk to, you can go out on the street in any place in this country and you can ask, who are you voting for? And you'll get a 9-to-1 ratio for Donald Trump. So,
wow. Okay.
My hope is that it things go well. But I am prepared for more nonsense and BS from the election system. And, you know, I hope that doesn't happen, but if it does, my only hope is that it'll be a huge wake up call for people. And it'll mobilize people to really take some action and to push back against the government in a meaningful and productive way.
It's been really interesting chatting with you, Ian. Thank you for giving us a bit of time. That's Ian Smith, gym owner. Heard the story about the New Jersey experience, co-owner of Summit Rejuvenation and Recovery CBD. All the best to you. And maybe we can chat again sometime, maybe after November.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, call back anytime. I'd love to come on.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.